Welcome to mini episode number 3 of the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and our good friend Steve Callis coming at you tonight to talk baseball. Steve Callis, of course, you can hear him on WFAN in New York, as well as our old stomping grounds for the FDH Lounge, the Sports Talk Network, Monday through Friday, noon through 2. And Steve is good at talking at many different things. Of course, you often hear him speaking about the intersection of sports, ethics, and the law. But one of the things, one of his real strengths in addition to that is talking baseball. And what better guy to take a look ahead to October with? Because we're sitting here in late August here tonight, but we know a good chunk of the baseball picture already, the playoff picture for this year. So it's good to have him here. It's good to be able to sit down with him and talk baseball. Steve, how you doing tonight, my friend?
Doing great, Rick. Fantastic to be with you. I think this is going to be a fun show.
It is. It is. We've been doing these little mini episode chunks now. This is the third one that we've got going. We have really enjoyed kind of getting back to basics on putting our material out there in this way. So let's start by taking an overview of the season heading into October. It's still a month away, but a good chunk of the playoff picture is already set. Not too many races yet to be determined in baseball. It's been an odd kind of a year, more separation, I think, than we're used to seeing. And really, at the beginning of the season, there were a lot of folks that were saying Philadelphia and Boston to the World Series, and as of right now, they've got the best records in both leagues. So it's playing out as a lot of people thought with the chalk already, but you've got a couple other strong teams in there as well record-wise. The Yankees are hanging in there pretty well for not having much in the way of starting pitching. Atlanta has really been pretty strong. Milwaukee's been on a tear. Atlanta and Milwaukee have really been doing it with their bullpens as well as being fairly well-rounded. So San Francisco has made a good run. They currently trail Arizona. So what are some of the key things that are jumping out at you as we head into the latter stages here and then into October with the playoff field?
Well, I think one of the most interesting things, and on the one hand it's interesting, on the other hand it's almost boring nowadays, Rick, is it's always Boston and the Yankees, Tampa Bay with an outside shot at the wild card, I guess, but it's always been Boston and the Yankees. But as you know, many years ago, that was the exciting pennant race or the exciting division race where the winner made the playoffs and the loser didn't. Nowadays, of course, it's become in the last few years, the winner makes the playoffs, the loser gets the wild card, and maybe they meet again in the playoffs and maybe they don't. Of course, the talk in New York is who's the number two starter, and frankly, there's no answer to that. Your best candidate right now might be Nova, who is 13-4 and a candidate for Rookie of the Year, but what are you going to do, dump him in a game two in the playoffs? That's a tall order to ask. The other guys really have been hot and cold as late. Even though I'm a New York guy, I like Boston to win the AL East. And frankly, if Boston winds up playing the Yankees at some point in the playoffs for the pennant, most likely if they all made it that far, you know, C.C. Sabathia is 0-4 against Boston. So I don't know. You can make the case the Yankees don't have a number one, although Sabathia has been great, tailed off a little lately, been great all year. But how are the Yankees going to beat the Red Sox when their number one hasn't beaten them? And yes, everyone says, oh, you make the playoffs, throw out the regular season records. I'm not so sure if that's true with a specific pitcher against a specific team. The notion, for example, to me, that a C.C. Sabathia could beat the Red Sox twice or even three times because he can't pitch on 3 days rest in a seven-game series is just unrealistic given the fact that he's 0-4 and has been hammered in three of those four games. So that's an interesting thing to me. But I think in terms of a pennant race, of course, there no longer are pennant races. There are division races. The sad thing to me is this is not a battle. You'll recall last year at the end of the year, Joe Girardi didn't even line up his pitching to try and win the AL East. He lined up his pitching intelligently to make the playoffs for his playoff run. So that's one thing that strikes me. The other two things I think we should talk about are the Western Division races. To me, those are pretty much the real races, Texas and the Angels, Arizona and San Francisco. I happened to pick Texas and San Francisco before the season, thinking San Francisco's pitching would carry them much like last year. But you have to give Arizona and probable manager of the year, would you say, in the NL, Rick, Kirk Gibson?
Yes.
You got to give him a lot of credit because right now with a four-game lead, surprising to me, the Giants went out and they got Orlando Cabrera from the Indians, who's been a solid in the infield, but they got Carlos Beltran, as you know, from the Mets, and he wasn't doing well when he came over. Had a great year in his walk year for the Mets. Then he got injured, missed 13 games, did hit a home run his second game back, I think, but he's been a disappointment. So although I picked San Francisco, you got to like Arizona with the four-game lead right now. And Texas and L.A., Texas, you know, drew off to 6-7, but then L.A. has played them very tough of late. I still like Texas. I like their lineup. I like their pitching. I think Josh Hamilton is one of the most talented guys we've seen in a generation. So I still like Texas. I pick San Francisco, and I will stay with them as my pick, but I think Arizona's going to win that division. As you said, the other divisions are pretty well set.
I give you credit for being prescient here, taking San Francisco. I thought Colorado was going to come back strong and have a good year. I was wrong about that. I don't think anybody saw Arizona coming the way that they have. I saw the Angels. I was one of the few who was picking them in the American League West. I'm not so sure I stay by that right now, trailing as they are, because their hitting has just been god-awful. Texas, I did foresee the Angels pitching bouncing back strongly as it has this year. Texas, what do you make of them? Because they have, maybe on paper, the best pitching in the American League if you're going to go three deep, four deep, as far as guys who can match up. I wonder if they're top-heavy enough to be able to do it, and I wonder if they have even one guy you can point to and say, yeah, that's who I want out there in a big game.
Well, of course, now that Cliff Lee's not around, and he was the kind of stud that they had, I think you're right, but they do have a lot of very good pitchers. And most importantly to me, I thought the wild card there for them early on was going to be Michael Young, because you'll recall they told Michael Young he wasn't going to play in the field. He was bitterly disappointed in that, asked for a trade. They came out and said, oh, we're not going to trade you. They had Beltre at third. Beltre was having an excellent year coming over from the Red Sox, but then, as you know, Beltre got hurt. Michael Young eventually got to play third, but for the first 100 games, or I shouldn't say 100, about 75 games of the year, he was the DH, hitting .335. So I do think they have solid pitching. Yes, they don't have that superstar, but they have guys who have now been there before with C.J. Wilson, Kobe Lewis. They've got those kinds of guys. But now, to me, their lineup with Hamilton back and healthy, with Michael Young being unconscious all year. I mean, I don't think he's had a downtime all year. Beltre was fantastic when he could play. Andrus, the shortstop, really showed how good he was last year in the playoffs. So I think, frankly, although we all agree pitching and defense, I think they have a really good lineup, and I think their lineup is better than the Angels. And even though I assume we'll both agree the Angels pitching at the top is better at that top level, I still like Texas to win that division. And I think it's as much, in my opinion, because of the attitude of Michael Young. I want to be out of here. They didn't send me out of here. I didn't sulk and hit .270. I've led the team in hitting. If you had to pick an MVP of the Angels for the season, given the fact that Hamilton was out a lot of the time, Nelson Cruz missed some time, I think you would give it to Michael Young, which is kind of hard to say about a DH, but it's a DH in a situation, I think, where he could have gone south on the team, and he didn't.
He really could have, and he has been strong for them, a lot stronger than I thought he was going to be, quite frankly. It's a situation where if the Angels do win the AL West, that's really going to put the old maxim about pitching trumping hitting in October to the test, isn't it? Because I understand the hitting's been coming alive a little bit more recently, but that offense has been way more slaptastic than I thought it was going to be when I picked them to win the West at the beginning of the year. It's going to be a situation where it may really be a battle of extremes. Say, for example, if they line up against the Yankees in a series, which could well happen, you're going to have the Yankees with those bats, the exceptional offense that they've had this year, great pop in an era where the pop is really kind of diminishing now,
right,
versus the Angels, who, again, might as well be swinging fungo bats in many parts of the lineup, but just one, two, and now maybe three in that rotation with Irvin Santana.
No question, and Santana for those five or six starts just a few weeks ago was the best pitcher in baseball. But I will say this, the other wild card, no pun intended, is the Angels manager, of course, Mike Socia, to me is one of the three or four best managers in baseball.
And agreed.
Nothing against Ron Washington, who certainly did a good job with them last year, but I think Socia in the pinch, in the clutch, in a division where they're only two out in the loss column at this stage, I think Socia can be the wild card that puts them over the top. And, of course, you know, they have Weaver, who's on that very short list, I think behind Verlander, but on that very short list of potential Cy Young guys this year, who's frankly pitched out of his mind, got smacked around a little the other night, but he's pitched out of his mind. But I think Socia could be also, in addition to the pitching, as you point out, the wild card that puts them over the top.
Not sure if any of the teams in the AL, and we'll get back to this in a little bit here, not sure if any of them would match up to Philly in a World Series. Let's take a look at the National League, because that's the only question that really bears any relevance if you're looking at the pennant right now. Is there anybody that can step up and stop them? Obviously, if you break it down, San Francisco in terms of the starting pitching, still lines up as well as anybody possibly could. Milwaukee is very well balanced. Their starting pitching is very good. They've got an excellent lineup now trading for K-Rod. They can go eighth inning, ninth inning with you. Atlanta has had really an excellent bullpen. I mean, even if they've had some spots in the starting lineup that have been a little bit weaker than they might have hoped for, they've got the bullpen that can really shut it down. They've got some starting pitchers that can really go toe-to-toe with the Phillies here. So is there anybody that you would give decent odds of stopping the Phillies in the National League?
You know, I wouldn't give very good odds. I would say the Giants, because of Lincecum, Kane, and this Vogel song, have been very good this year. But again, you see them struggling at 71-63. The acquisition of Beltran, who I thought, having watched him in New York all year, having a heck of a year, power-wise, RBI-wise, hitting in the 280s all year, I thought would be a big addition. Hasn't worked out for them. I just think Philly, I saw them live. I went down to Philadelphia and watched them, I'll say, about a month ago, and I actually saw this Vance Worley pitch live. I mean, he's 9-1. You don't even know who the guy was at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. So they go so deep at the pitching as well. I think the key to that series, not expecting the Giants to hit but to pitch well, and Philly, we all know what they have of the top of their rotation, is the Philly hitting, because the guys like Utley, Hurt Early, Jimmy Rollins, Ryan Howard, they have not had the kind of years they thought they would. And every week when I look at their lineup, and as you know, I do that SportsTalkNetwork.com show every day, so I'm looking at their lineup every day. You go, when are these guys going to hit? When are these guys going to hit? Shane Victorino, Raul Ibanez. I mean, they have, when their lineup is clicking, they have a much, much better lineup than the Giants. But I must say, watching them all year, they have not had that kind of offensive season. And if they want to roll through the playoffs, which we all thought, I think they could at the beginning of the year because of their pitching, they're going to have to hit a little bit. And look, that's with an 83-46 record, so it's hard to complain. But I'm looking to the future, and you're right, it is the pitching. Milwaukee, very good. I don't think they match up pitching-wise with the Giants. Having said that, Arizona is ahead of them. The former Yankee, who I watched pitch for a few years, Ian Kennedy, is the reason. I mean, Arizona, 16 games over 500. I think Ian Kennedy is 14 games over 500. So he's the guy. And, of course, Milwaukee with Greinke, a great pickup. He went to 10-0 at home yesterday. Milwaukee a factor, but if anyone could beat Philly, even though I don't think you'd put them second on the list of best teams in the National League, I would say it's the Giants, because in a five-game series, you can trot out those three guys and one of them twice, and that's going to be tough to beat. Of course, Philly trots out their own three, four. I mean, they could go five or six deep, for goodness sakes. It's unbelievable what they have.
And it's a really odd picture when you look at the San Francisco offense over the last 2 years. To have them do what they did last year with Kung Fu Panda basically being AWOL the entire year, and yet this year he's the guy who's holding it together.
Right.
He came back, he dropped all the weight, everything's been great there, and they've needed it because with Buster Posey going down, essentially Sandoval is filling the role that Posey had last year offensively. The thing that struck me last year about them, when people looked at Aubrey Huff and Cody Ross, and especially Huff and Pat Burrell and a couple of these guys, I looked at it and some people thought it was fluky, and I said, it's not so much that, it's that the Giants were lucky. They summoned up the best versions of themselves at that point of time. They've been inconsistent over the course of their careers. It happened to be the good Aubrey, the good Burrell at that point in time. This year, it's not really been the case as much. The Beltran deal hasn't had the impact to date that they would have hoped for. So what do you look at when you see them? What are you thinking about that lineup? And it's really been pretty pathetic to this point in time here. It's the very reason a lot of people feared at this point last year they would fall apart. They didn't. Do you think over the course of the next couple of weeks and then into October, if they make it that far, that they can rally again?
I think they can rally again, but again, I know when Beltran was traded, I think his numbers were like 17 home runs and 60 RBIs, and the day he walked into the San Francisco Giant clubhouse, not only was he going to bat third or fourth, he was their team leader in home runs and RBIs. So that tells you all you need to know even about these other guys. But as you know, to me, in the playoffs, they did hit well. You know, you had unsung guys like Cody Ross hitting out of their minds. I mean, they really did perform offensively in the playoffs like we didn't think they could. But frankly, I'm looking at it in terms of trying to beat Philly. I'm looking at it more from a pitching percent perspective than a hitting perspective. Yes, they're going to have to score a little, but I would guess if there's ever a Philly-Giants series in the playoffs this year that it will be one of those old-fashioned 1950s or 60s 2-1, 3-2, 1-0 games, which we have seen the Giants throw in the past. And I think we always go back to what we know and what we learn, Rick, which is pitching and defense. So when you're going to look at all of these teams in the American League and the National League after Philly from a pitching perspective, I think you're going right to the Giants still.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think they match up obviously very well. To circle back around now, I take it full circle to the American League. If we're saying that Philly is the team to beat in the National League, and we're dismissing in doing that some pretty good teams where they've played, Atlanta, Milwaukee, San Francisco, even Arizona, as inexplicable as some of their success may seem, we're dismissing some pretty good teams by saying Philly is the team to beat. Is there anybody in the American League that would cause us to say that Philly's not the team to beat overall? Because to me, that's not the case. To me, if we're saying Atlanta, Milwaukee, San Francisco shouldn't be favored to take them out, then I'm not going to turn around and say even Boston, the Yankees, or Texas should be favored.
Well, I hate to pick the chalk, and I don't think Boston will be favored against Philly, but again, living in New York and following the AL East as much or more than anyone, when you look at Boston's lineup when they're healthy, earlier in the year, Pedroia was hurt. Euclid, I think, still on the DL, or maybe just coming off now. Ortiz missed 9 games with that foot. But when you watch this lineup, and I watch them a lot, when you watch this lineup when they're healthy, Ellsbury talked about as an MVP candidate, Pedroia, a former MVP.
Well, where did those two guys learn to hit for power?
I mean, just unbelievable. You know, they had that great article in the cover story a couple weeks ago on Pedroia in Sports Illustrated, and it was just amazing to read, he's a scrappy guy, you know he's a talented player, but he swings more ferociously than any little guy I've ever seen. You're not talking about Phil Rizzuto here. But again, when you go through the lineup, Gonzalez was the MVP until, in my view, according to Peter Gammons, he hurt his neck. He had that 84 at-bat homerless streak. Prior to that, he was hitting 350. And I thought was the MVP of the league through the first 90 games. Then I heard Gammons say, now, Gonzalez came back and hit 3 home runs in 2 days last year. Maybe he's healed. His average is back up to 348. But again, when you go down the list, you know, Ortiz upset in Boston because they wouldn't give him a new contract. Still hovering around 300 with good power this year. You'll recall everybody thought he was done after April of last season when he was hitting 180, came back to have a good year. So again, you know, when they have a guy like Reddick who comes off the bench who was hitting like 330 most of the year, when you go full lineup, I think their lineup, and I'm a New York guy, I think the Red Sox lineup when healthy is better than the Yankee lineup when healthy, and that's saying a lot. But certainly there's no comparison average-wise. You can talk power-wise for the Yankees, of course. But again, to me, at the end of the day, when you can trot out Beckett and Lester, or Lester and Beckett, pick them any way you want, I don't see how the Yankees are going to match that in the American League. And I think you can go up against Philly with that twosome. Now, you're going to have to scramble after that, and that's the problem with the Yankees. Frankly, you have to scramble after Sabathia, although you'll throw some good pitchers. I don't want to denigrate the Yankees pitching. You know, they get pounded in New York because they don't have a number two, and I agree with that. But they got a ton of threes and fours, and if one of those guys can step up, I don't think it's going to be A.J. Burnett. He got hammered again last outing. I mean, I understand they're paying him a lot of money, but they keep trotting him out there, I think, because they'll lose him mentally for the next 2 years if they relegate him to the bullpen now. But he's been, frankly, terrible. I heard Brian Cashman, and I like Brian Cashman, and he's a guy who really, I think, does try to tell the truth. I don't think he lies to you. But he came on a week ago in New York and said, his last 9 starts, he had 2 horrible starts and 7 okay starts. And those 7 okay starts, you and I would say, were 7 mediocre starts. And for a $16 million pitcher, to me, they were 7 bad starts.
Yeah.
So they're trying to put a happy face on A.J. Burnett. And even though he pitched great in Game 2 of the 2009 World Series, to me, that was the high point of the time he's been here. He was 10-15 last year, the worst record for a Yankee starter with over 25 starts or whatever the statistic was in the history of the Yankees. This year, I think 9-10 again, not pitching well of late. So, you know, but you do have guys, they rebuilt Bartolo Colon's arm. Did they do it with stem cells and HGH or just stem cells? We're not sure. They're investigating that doctor, but he threw 95 all year. But his last 4 or 5 starts haven't been good. Freddy Garcia does it with smoke and mirrors. You'd be afraid to put him against a good hitting team in the playoffs. Nova, I think, is moving into Phil Hughes, came back from that arm injury with 4 good starts and then got hammered last week. I thought he was going to be the 20-game winner, number 2, solidly this year. Obviously, that hasn't worked out. So they do have a lot of potential, but, you know, we're getting to October soon, already near September, and potential isn't going to get it. Who are you going to name for number two? I couldn't even answer that question right now. Nova's been their second-best pitcher for the last 6 weeks, I'll say. And don't forget, they sent him to the minors, for goodness sakes,
yeah,
when he was 8-4. Now he's come back, he's 13-4.
Well, not only that, when you look at it, you got some National League teams like Atlanta, like Milwaukee, potentially so even, I'd say, Texas in the American League, where with the bullpen, maybe you can afford a bad outing, and then the bullpen can basically pull it out for you or stem the bleeding. The thing that the Yankees can't count on, I mean, and this has been almost a constant ever since Mariano Rivera stopped being their eighth-inning guy back in the
right.
in the late 90s,
right.
the bridge to Rivera. They can't even count on that. I mean, I was just saying to somebody the other day, I look at the 2001 World Series, and one of the reasons I think they lost it is Torrey didn't trust anybody other than Rivera. He
right.
was running them out there in two-inning starts, and you know, we can sit here and bemoan the way that they baby pitchers these days, but that's the conditioning. That's what they're used to. I don't think they're going to fall into that same habit at Mariano Rivera's advanced age. They're not going to run him out there for two-inning starts left and right, but you don't even have that bridge to fall back upon that if you have a bad outing. It's not like you can count on the guys leading up to Rivera to keep you in the game or win it.
Well, now David Robinson did make the All-Star team, and he was lights out early in the season. He certainly did have a bad spell there for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've brought him back now to be the eighth-inning guy. You know, Soriano, you probably heard the rumors out of Tampa Bay. You know, he couldn't pitch in a non-save situation. He wanted to be a closer. He took the money to be the eighth-inning guy. Cashman came out and said, I did not want to give him closer money to be the eighth-inning guy. It was the other guys, the Steinbrenner brothers, et cetera, who wanted to do that. But, yes, Soriano has been a huge disappointment. I'm sure you know Robertson was the seventh-inning guy originally. Inherited the eighth-inning role. Soriano did not pitch well, and then he got hurt and was on the DL. I think Robertson can be the eighth-inning guy, but I totally agree. It's a question mark. And you go back to 96 when, of course, it was Mariano in the eighth and John Wetland in the ninth. I think Wetland got a save in every game of the World Series in 96, but obviously they felt comfortable enough with Mariano. Obviously a brilliant and correct decision to let Wetland go. But, yes, you're right. There's been, you know, they had Stanton and Jeff Nelson for those years to get to Mariano, and those were the World Series years, winning years, frankly. But now it is a bit of a question mark. I think they're going to line up Robertson. I don't think they're going to boot him out of the eighth inning. He was great. By the All-Star break, he made the All-Star team, as you'll recall, late addition, but he did make the All-Star team, and I thought deserved it. Did step back a little after the All-Star break. Soriano has come back just to be hot and cold. So I totally agree that is a problem, and you don't have, other than Sabathia, again, you don't have a lot of innings either. These guys are not going to go eight innings. You're not going to see Freddy Garcia or even Nova, you know, I think he did it once, or certainly not Cologne anymore. A.J. Burnett, you know, it looks like he blows up in the fifth or sixth every game. So I think that is a key. But getting back to your original question vis-a-vis Philly, to me, it's only Boston. I don't see another team. And again, I'm a New York guy. If the Tigers could play Philly or anybody in a five-game series and you could trot out Verlander in 1-5, I've seen Verlander pitch a lot. I remember seeing him live at the stadium 3 years ago, and I said to my son, again, we had good seats near home plate. When you see a guy live, it's different, as you know, from watching him on TV. And I said, my God, this guy has such great stuff. He should be a Cy Young Award winner. And now, finally, 3-4 years later, he should be. He's got the best batting average against. He won his 20th game. I've written articles, Rick, that nobody is ever going to win 30 games again because these starters get 34, 35 starts. That's it. That's not going to happen. Even before you talk about closers and setup men and nobody goes nine innings anymore.
Right.
But a guy like Verlander, in fact, I said that it's going to be hard for someone to win 25 games. Now, Verlander with 20 actually has a shot. I think in the last 10 years or so, only Randy Johnson once pitched for his 25th victory that magical year with the Diamondbacks and didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I write an article, no one's going to win 30 again, I write, my goodness, nobody might ever win 25 again, yet Verlander has a chance this year. So, again, and whoever plays Detroit in the first series, I think they're going to have troubles because they're going to face Verlander twice. I don't care who Detroit is playing. They can beat anybody. But, of course, that's not going to happen versus a National League appointment team if they ever made it to the World Series. So it's the first round for Detroit. You know, Scherzer is good, Penny's okay, but I don't think they can go deep enough to win a seven-game series against somebody good. They have Miguel Cabrera, who I think is the best hitter in baseball. I see him do things that
other hitters don't see. I remember last year I saw Phil Hughes throw him 7 fastballs in a row and then throw him a curveball. He hit it 430 feet into the left center field bleachers at Yankee Stadium, and people don't hit it that far at Yankee Stadium. So I think they're dangerous, but they're much more dangerous to me in a 5-game series.
Yes.
If you try and have Verlander go 3 days rest twice, I don't think that's a good idea. Sabathia, frankly, is really the only guy I saw do it, and that was actually with Milwaukee a few years ago. And then that was to make the playoffs, and then I thought he got a little tired, frankly, going on 3 days rest. I don't think you can have guys do it 4, 5, 6 times. Could Sabathia do it a couple of times? Absolutely. After that, I think essentially it's a question mark, although I'm sure you know that the Angels did it recently. Santana did an okay job the other night against Texas, and Weaver got smacked around in like the third or fourth inning the other night, also on 3 days rest because the series was so big to the Angels. So I think that's something you have to consider, but I think it's unlikely that it would happen. And again, when you do it, I think the numbers are historically in the last 10 years against you.
I think they are. And as far as it goes with Sabathia, granted he got the monkey off his back when they won the World Series in 09, but I can tell you, as a bitter Tribe fan from 07, he had not been reputed to be a big-game pitcher prior to that. So what you were quoting before, the numbers against Boston, is indicative of that, that this is not necessarily the guy you want going mano-a-mano with Beckett as he was in 07, as he might have to be with Verlander. Yeah, that could come back to bite them potentially. To start to bring this full circle here tonight, I want to spring on you, Steve, our proposed FDH rule changes here for the baseball postseason for seeding. I want to get your ideas on this here. I've come up with a proposal, and we'll be putting this up on our blog at thefdhlounge.blogspot.com. And you'll notice here on the little Venn diagram in front of us here how I have numbered the seeds in each league as they would stand presently. Here's how it would go subsequently. I'm sure you've heard the proposal about adding one additional wild card team in each league, and then presumably that would be a one-game set. The thought being you don't want to – you'll disadvantage the teams getting a quote-unquote bye if they have to sit too long. Just ask the 06 Tigers about that. So, but the way that we would do it is – you take the top two division winners in each league. They are seeds 1 and 2. The other division winner and 3 wild cards would be seeded 3 through 6 in any order. So in the American League, it would be right now Boston the 1, Texas the 2, Yankees the 3 by dint of the record coming ahead of Detroit. Detroit's not guaranteed anything other than making the playoffs. Tampa 4, Detroit 5, L.A. Angels 6. In the National League, it would be Philly 1, Milwaukee 2, Atlanta 3. Again, as the wild card, they could still be 3. Arizona 4, San Francisco 5, St. Louis 6. What the proposal would be, and this would certainly add meaning to it again, when you talk about between Boston and New York, because right now, other than who you'd rather play, there's nothing that says we have an advantage in being the AL East champions versus the wild card.
Right.
This would be very stark. If you're the 3 team, on Monday, after the season starts, you host the 6 team, one game, winner take all, 4-5, one game, winner take all. And you would have the 4 teams advancing to the playoffs in each league. So you would have that where you would have the top 4 seeds advancing, but there would be the winner take all element in there. So talk about that as far as some might say that it might be too much like March Madness with the whole aspect of one game, winner take all. But that's what you play to avoid in the regular season, and that's the thought process. Also, it would allow Tampa, it would allow other teams, theoretically even Toronto, to make the playoffs because they've had a pretty strong year, too. They're only a couple games back of the 6th seed right now, the L.A. Angels. So thoughts on the system here, strengths and weaknesses as you see it?
My initial thoughts are not a bad idea, certainly very exciting. To me, though, baseball has never been, unlike football, unlike March Madness, it's never been a one-game winner-take-all, and I'm just concerned how would one view the regular season? Yes, you have to try and get into the 2 top seeds, obviously, but if you come up short and you're 3-4, and, you know, frankly, a team like the Yankees at 79-52, a very good example of that, they now put their entire 162-game season in the hands of C.C. Sabathia for one game.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know, to me, if that's fair enough. And the other thing that bothers me, it has nothing to do with your system here, just the wild card in general. And, yeah, you can call me a baseball purist. That's fine. And we all understand the attraction of the wild card, how you can keep 8, 10, 12 teams in. One of the reasons they want to bring in another wild card is not only to have this one game or 2 out of 3 playoff you've discussed,
but also to have even more teams. You know, 2 weeks ago I was talking still about Minnesota, 12 games under 500 with an outside chance. I think they're done now. In fact, I called them done probably earlier than most because they always make that great run. But you want to keep as many teams from a business perspective. The fans still want to go out. They were actually pitching the Mets as a wild card team in the National League when they were, you know, 18 games behind Philly and still 8 games behind the Braves. There's no way to me that they were a wild card team. But if you had another wild card, for example, they would be. But the thing that's always bothered me about the wild card, and I understand why it's there, it's kind of like the shootout in hockey. You want more excitement, more excitement, more excitement. But prior to the wild card in baseball, you had to win in baseball to win.
Mm-hmm.
And with the wild card, I think the Angels were the first team to win the World Series as the wild card. It's happened 3 or 4 times now. It's old news now. To me, again, maybe as a purist, I would almost rather see 4 divisions in each league, 4 winners, because then you win something. The argument against that to people like me is, well, they won the wild card. Mm-hmm. And I say yes, but every team that won the wild card came in second.
Yeah.
And, again, until 1969, you had to win the pennant, obviously. But even in 69 when they split, you'll recall the Atlanta Braves losing to the Mets in a shocking year, of course, 69. But they both still at least won their division. I could live with that even when I was a little kid and that happened. But the wild card to me, and I almost like the notion that you might have to add another one, because if you have one, if you're going to buy into that system, it's better with two. I agree with that. I think the problem, I like the 3-6-4-5, but I think the problem is one game. Obviously, I know you're going to say, if you made that series 2 out of 3, then you'd have the 2 best teams not pitching for 5 or 6
You're going to ice them, yeah.
And that is not like a bye week in football, for example.
Not advantageous.
So I understand that, but to me, I think the argument against would be, it's an interesting system, but the main argument against would be, you've got now these teams who have put in 162 games, and a team like the Yankees that might wind up being 25, 30 games over 500 and not being one of the top 2 seeds, and then, you know, getting eliminated because, let's just say, Irvin Santana pitched unconscious like he has recently and shuts down the Yankees, or David Price goes lights out if that was the 3-6 game, for example. So it would be a little much to me. I like the theory of it. I don't know that you can make it longer for the reasons you stated. And it would be very, very exciting, nothing like do or die. But I think a little unfair, and I don't know what it would do to cheapen the regular season and, frankly, regular season attendance.
Interesting. Well, my thought on eliminating the Yankees from being the 2 seed was, how do you maintain even a semblance of integrity for the division system? In other words, like if they could be ahead of Texas. I went back and forth on that point, but I thought if you don't guarantee that the 2 is a division winner, then you go even further afield, because they're talking about this other system potentially, and I don't think it'll happen if they go 15-15 of just taking the top 5 teams in each league and making it. You know, you might as well do that if it's going to be a thing where the divisions don't mean anything. And honestly, I could be persuaded on that as well. I'm not necessarily an absolutist on the divisions staying in. I'm open to different things. But yeah, you raised some good questions, you know, pro and con on the system.
But I do agree with you that the Yankees in your suggested system would have to be number 3, even if they did have a better record than Texas. But I'll give you one other thing. Facetiously, a number of years ago, I wrote an article because, again, I am against the wild card in theory. Obviously, it's here to stay. It's not going away. I think you're right. They'll probably add another one for next year. But I wrote an article once where I said, to me, it should be that winners win. So why not have, and I was being ridiculous, but why not have 15 two-team divisions and then have the best record of the 15 losers be the wild card and go 16 and go 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 5, more like an NCAA tournament, or even, frankly, you know, 10 three-team divisions, and I, again, say both of those facetiously, but at least in those examples, Rick, the winners would win.
Yeah.
And only in one, you know, again, almost laughingly, the 16th team, the second-place team in the 15 two-team divisions with the best record would make the playoffs. But I've always kind of been against it ever since it came out, although, again, we all understand the key for all of these teams now. Look, the Knicks opened the season, we think they're going to be 25 games under 500 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, wow, they have a chance for the 8th spot. Mm-hmm. Well, hold it now. And the Knicks in 1999 in the strike-shortened 50-game season did just get into the 8th spot and made a run to the finals. I think that's absurd that the 8th best record can even think about making the finals, never mind winning a championship. So I I've always had problems in hockey and basketball. Been like that forever. Football, decades ago, did not have a wild card, as you know.
Right.
It was almost worse in football. You used to see guys going in the 14-game schedule. If you look at the history books, there were guys who went 12-2 and didn't make the playoffs. It was ridiculous the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm against the wild card. I like your theory. I think they're going to have to add a second wild card. And I think you're right. The division winners have to get a little more oomph. I don't know what the reaction would be, in your example, to the third division winner, frankly, possibly being a fifth or sixth seed. But again, to me, for the baseball Bud Selig's of the world, it's all about keeping 10, 12, 14 teams in the mix rather than 5, 6, 7. That's why all this is happening.
Exactly. That's the reason behind everything. The last thing I want to ask you about here tonight, our senior producer, Steve Cervillo, wanted me to get some thoughts from you on this Mike Jacobs situation. And I know I've been talking about this for years, the whole thing of HGH in baseball. Everybody's saying, baseball's clean because the steroids are allegedly gone. But there's a lot of designer drugs
right.
out there, Steve.
Absolutely.
And, you know, until we have the blood and the hair tests, it's really going to be out there. So this is really the start of taking a look at this issue here. And what do you think some of the ramifications of that are going to be?
Well, I think the most interesting thing is, and they've batted around HGH testing for years now, the problem, as you know, is there's no urine test that is a viable test that is recognized by the World Anti-Doping Association, WADA. But I was interested in the whole Mike Jacobs thing because I had frankly forgotten that the minor leaguers do have to subject themselves to blood testing. You know, I saw Mike Jacobs come up with the Mets, very powerful guy. Don't know what he was using back then. Obviously, he tried to, you know, he said he made a mistake. But, you know, once you take it, you're coming up positive.
Mm-hmm.
In the minor leagues. Now, the major leagues have not agreed. And I think it's a negotiation point in the NFL, by the way. But I do not know of any union in professional sports, and I kind of limit my knowledge, frankly, to baseball, football, basketball, and hockey, that allows a league to stick a needle into a player in the majors to draw blood. That would be a new frontier. I'm for it, easy for me to say, but it would clean up what you've just posited as, frankly, the HGH question. And whatever you think of Jim Thome, for example, never really a sniff in terms of HGH or steroids. I can tell you, Joel Sherman in the New York Post, they showed it on ESPN, his first home run off of Steve Farr of the Yankees in Yankee Stadium in the upper deck. No mean shot, an incredible shot, as you know. Thome looked like a stick figure compared to what he looks like today.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, Thome never rumored, no nothing, no Mitchell report, no secret list, no nothing. But Joel Sherman did write such a column. If you're going to answer all these questions, no, you need a blood test for HGH. And the other thing I'll tell you, which I don't care what they can test for, we've seen it in track and field for decades. I can tell you as a guy who's an avid harness racing and thoroughbred racing fan, we have seen it now in horse racing for the last 15 years. Whatever test you guys come up with, you guys being the anti-drug experts, there's another drug out there that you don't know about yet, and the whole game is the bad guys in track and field and in horse racing staying a jump ahead of those guys. I'm afraid what you say, not just HGH, there may be some steroids that nobody can test for. You know how the whole Balco thing came down? Conte said, yeah, there's no test for this yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we always got to stay ahead. We got to find out what they're testing for, and we'll find something else, and we'll make something else. So I think you're right. I think we're not out of the woods. Obviously, the baseball numbers over the last 2 years has indicated there's been a drop for the most part. I think the Yankees are an exception. I think Yankee Stadium is playing a little more this year, like the Homer Park it was 2 years ago and was not last year. But again, I think you posit a very good point. Until there's blood testing, that to me would have to be the first thing to have a chance, because all the major leaguers could be using HGH now and nobody knows about it.
Absolutely, yeah. There's no way to be able to tell other than circumstantial evidence at this point in time. And as a lifelong resident of Cleveland, I can tell you how Thome did it back in the day. That was all cheeseburgers and milkshakes. That's how the frame changed. He did it the honest farm boy way. Well, our good friend Steve Callis, one of the first guys to become an FDH Lounge dignitary outside of our original crew. Steve, I know everybody can find your writings at Callis Remarks. That's stevecallis.com, K-A-L-L-A-S. You can be heard, of course, Monday through Friday, noon through 2 on sportstalknetwork.com and also on WFAN. I know you've got some stints coming up with Rick Wolf.
Yeah, we've been doing some stuff with Rick, a lot of youth sports stuff. You know, the Little League World Series just ended. There's a lot of issues there. they just, believe it or not, came out with a curveball study that essentially said it's okay for an 11 and 12 year olds to throw curveballs, which is, ugh, you know, to me, it stood numerous studies and decades of medicine on its head, but that's an ongoing issue. I also do a Thursday night show, as you know, Rick, in New York, WVOX.com, 1460 AM if you're in the New York City area. That's limited to New York sports. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun doing this with you. We had a blast. I hope we can do a few more in the future.
Looking forward to it, my friend. Thank you so much, as always. We'll catch you soon with mini episode number 4 of the FDH Lounge.